Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. In the State of the Union Address, President Obama surprised many Americans when he said this.
Tonight, I propose working with states to make high-quality preschool available to every single child in America.
But how feasible is the president's plan in the age of deficit reduction? For example, the sequestration budget, if it goes into effect, would reportedly eliminate 70,000 Head Start slots. And just how beneficial would universal pre-K be anyway? Is it worth the taxpayers' money? Our next guest is Motoko Rich, who covers education for the New York Times and has been looking into this question. Motoko Rich, welcome back to WNYC. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me.
And we heard the president's call to extend preschool to all of the country's four-year-olds. He then made an appearance later in the week at a Head Start program in Decatur, Georgia, where he unveiled more details of his plan for universal pre-K. What's in it?
Well, it's a little bit more moderated from that very blanket universal statement he made in the State of the Union. The plans that he talked about on Thursday included education for all four-year-olds in low and moderate-income families. So he said that the federal government's plan would support state funding to provide slots for families who make up to 200% of the poverty line. He also wants to encourage and give incentives to states to make slots available to everyone. But the commitment seemed to be more focused on low to moderate-income families.
And we know that preschool access varies from state to state. Florida, Vermont, and Oklahoma have the top rates of enrollment, with more than 70% of four-year-olds enrolled in state-financed preschools. He went to Georgia to make a point about how well they do, but the national average is just 28%.
Exactly.
Is there
and
any?
In some
Go
states,
ahead.
It's far lower. Say in Alabama, I wrote about the rate there is only 6%. And that state, the governor has suggested or requested that the new budget for this year have a pretty dramatic increase in funding for state-funded slots because they believe that it is very important to get as many four-year-olds as possible into preschool to prepare them for public schooling K through 12.
So how's the data? Is there any measurable difference in the academic proficiency between students in the states with the highest enrollments and with the lowest enrollments in pre-K?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I don't think there's enough data on that particular question. There are a number of research studies that have been done on different programs. There's a very famous program that was done in Ypsilanti, Michigan, called the Perry Project, which looked at very high-quality pre-K program with a lot of parental involvement, and those kids, when they were traced over a number of years, showed measurable effects on all kinds of things, like graduation rates and higher incomes when they were employed, more likelihood to score higher on reading and math tests. On the other hand, we have a fairly big pool of kids in subsidized pre-K through the Head Start program, which you mentioned in your intro, and those studies have been mixed, that some of those effects, overall, the average cognitive benefits that are achieved during the preschool years fade out by third grade. There could be a number of reasons for that, starting with the quality of the Head Start programs themselves. They're varied. Some are excellent. Some are not so. There's no national requirement that the teachers in the Head Start programs have early childhood credentials. But when you look at programs where there are high standards, where there are credentialed teachers, then the results seem to be better. But it is true that you can look at bodies of studies that sort of say one thing or another.
Why, then, should we expect a federally funded universal pre-K program to be of consistent high quality? One could argue that something that's funded from, you know, that high above or even is administered by the 50 states may be very, very inconsistent. Just look at how they're trying to improve the consistency of the New York City public schools in just one city.
Right. And that is a fair point from the very realistic, practical, how does this you know, there's one thing to set a theoretical policy, there's another thing to have it carried out. I think a lot of academics and people who've studied the results for a long time, and including politicians in some pretty conservative states, Oklahoma, for example, and Alabama, which I previously mentioned, think it's certainly worth the try, and that you set standards and that you require credentials for teachers and you have monitoring in place to try to make sure that this happens, rather than throwing up your hands and saying, well, it's not possible that it could work. When I was talking to some folks about the Head Start studies, some have argued that those aren't really fair studies. Like I said, they don't have standardized credential requirements or even standardized curriculums. And moreover, the pay is incredibly low on average for Head Start instructors. So I talked to someone who said, look, we haven't really had any kind of experiment of what the president is actually proposing, which is high quality. And he said in the details that he released that they would want the teachers to be paid on average what kindergarten teachers at public schools are taught. So a lot of the problem for some of these preschool programs I was talking to administrators told me is that the teachers could walk across the street and get an equivalent job teaching kindergarten, so just 1 or 2 year older kids at a public school, and make quite a bit more money than they would working at the preschool.
Yeah, so who's left to teach preschool and how good are those people?
Right.
I wonder if you've looked into the politics of pre-K or Head Start at the state level, because as we mentioned before, preschool access varies from state to state. Florida, Vermont, Oklahoma near the top. Those are very different states, Florida,
right.
Vermont, and Oklahoma. Georgia, where the president went, southern conservative state, not the first
right.
place you would think of with an aggressive
right.
pre-K program. And you mentioned Alabama, where Governor Robert Bentley, a Republican, has stated a goal of universal pre-K by the end of the next decade. And again, that's, you know, a southern, one of the most conservative states in America, Alabama. How do you explain it?
Well, it's fascinating. I don't know if I have a perfect explanation for it, but one of the things that was really interesting in Alabama was this coalition that had formed around groups that you would think would typically be supportive of early childhood education, advocates for the poor, advocates for early education who have looked at the studies that show positive benefits and truly believe that early education is the key, but also business leaders. So I talked to people who are one of the heads of the education committee of the Business Council of Alabama, and he said, he was very practical about it. He said, we can pay now or we can pay later. And a lot of the studies that show cognitive effects also show other effects like reduced crime rates. So kids who have good pre-K education are more likely to succeed as they grow through school, because school is something that's cumulative, right? It isn't just something that when you go into third grade, you're learning what you learn in third grade in isolation. It builds on what you've learned before. It builds on the reading that you learned at a young age. It builds on the math that you learned at the young age. It builds on the discipline skills that you learned at a young age. And the argument is, as it's cumulative, you're more likely to stay in school if you start out successfully than if you have to catch up. So both you're saving money on the actual remedial work that might have to be done for kids who didn't get a good solid base at the beginning, and it also can reduce crime, and that is a huge expense for states. One of the business leaders that I talked to said it pretty bluntly, I'd rather pay for pre-K spots than more prison cells.
And it's also, I think, for President Obama, an equality thing. We have such incredible income inequality, not just in New York, but all over America.
Right.
You know, this, and there are different ways to get at that. And he also proposed a minimum wage increase, higher education. But if pre-K is considered one of the things that would start a poor kid on the path to, you know, a chance at a more equal income with people in the middle class or the upper class, then this is really, really a cudgel in that direction, isn't it?
Absolutely. And there have been, you know, the past few years during the recession is when the kind of what many would describe as an alarming level of inequality in this country has really been exposed. And more studies show that it starts from a very young age, that if just by the luck of the draw you're born into an affluent family, you're very, very likely to end up affluent yourself. And if you're born into a poor family, you're very, very likely to end up poor yourself. And that the way we don't have a sort of official aristocracy in this country, but we do have kind of an entrenched affluent community that reinforces its descendants' affluence partly through the educational system by buying them really expensive private schooling, but also What was interesting to me when I wrote about this last week was that a lot of the commenters were saying, well, why should the government take over what is the parent's job? That we start school at kindergarten or first grade, but before that, it's the parent's responsibility to teach the kids all the things that they will need to know to be ready for kindergarten. And I think in a perfect world, that might be the case, but we live in a world where there are all kinds of other forces that we also value. We value women in the workforce. If there are two parents working, that means they can't both be home. They need quality childcare. We know that low-quality childcare is very bad for kids, that the studies that show that kids who do better with at least one parent in the home, it's usually when you're comparing averages, and a lot of the childcare is not very high quality. And so then you have the kids whose parents can afford either to pay for a very good private preschool or a nanny or to have one parent stay home will have a far greater advantage than the poor kids who have parents who both work in the kinds of jobs, moreover. I mean, let's say that those of us who work in professional level jobs probably have a little more flexibility in terms of managing our work schedule so that we can do things with our kids. What if you have a job where you have to work the night shift and you can't be there in the afternoon when they get home from school to help them with their homework? Or when they're very young, you can't be there at the hours when the kids are awake and would need to be taught the letters of the alphabet and that kind of thing. So I think a lot of what the argument about that you point out is that equity begins by giving everybody the same fresh start, the same beginning. They all start at the beginning, not with a bunch of kids way, way, way behind by the time they're 5 years old.
Well, a topic that most Americans did not think we would be having a big national conversation about this year, but that is the power of the presidency. And Barack Obama raised it in the State of the Union address, and here we go. So having looked at some of the research on the effectiveness of Head Start and other pre-K programs, we thank New York Times education correspondent Motoko Rich. Motoko, thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up next for this day off from school, we'll talk with three New York principals about the real world of running their schools. One of these is the Brooklyn High School principal, whose school was mentioned in the State of the Union address. Stay with us.